thing, but I can't do it back to her. Huh. We sat in silence a few moments, and I drank more water. Adrian spoke again.
What do you specialize in, anyway, cousin?
She looked embarrassed. We both knew it was important to keep her spirit power secret from others who might abuse her healing. But her cover story of not having specialized always bothered her. I haven't, she said.
Do they think you're going to, late bloomer?
No.
You're probably higher in the other elements, though, right? Just not strong enough to really master any?
He reached out to pat her shoulder in an exaggerated show of comfort.
Yeah, how'd you...
The instant his fingers touched her, she gasped. It was as though a bolt of lightning had struck her. The strangest look crossed her face. Even drunk, I felt the flood of joy that came pouring through the bond. She stared at Adrian in wonder. His eyes were locked onto hers, too. I didn't understand why they were looking at each other like that, but it bothered me. Hey, I said. Stop that. I told you she has a boyfriend.
I know,
he said, still watching her. A small smile turned his lips. We need to have a chat someday, cousin.
Yes, she agreed.
Hey! I was more confused than ever. You have a boyfriend, and there he is. She blinked back to reality. All three of us turned toward the doorway. Christian and the others stood there. I suddenly had a flashback to when they'd found me with Adrian's arm around me. This wasn't much better. Lissa and I were sitting on either side of him, very close. She sprang up, looking mildly guilty. Christian was regarding her curiously.
We're getting ready to leave, he said.
Okay, she told him.
She looked down at me.
Ready?
I nodded and started to clamber to my feet. Adrian caught my arm as I did and helped me up. He smiled at Lissa.
Nice talking to you.
To me, he murmured very quietly.
Don't worry, I told you. I'm not interested in her that way. She doesn't look as good in a bathing suit. Probably not as good out of one, either.
I pulled my arm away. Well, you'll never find out.
It's okay, he said. I have a good imagination.
I joined the others, and we headed back toward the main part of the lodge. Mason gave me as strange a look as Christian had given Lissa and stayed away from me, walking toward the front with Eddie. To my surprise and discomfort, I found myself walking beside Maya. She looked miserable.
I'm really sorry about what happened, I said finally.
You don't have to act like you care, Rose.
No, I mean it. It's horrible. I'm so sorry.
She wouldn't look at me.
Are you going to see your dad soon?
Whenever they have the memorial, she said stiffly.
Oh.
I didn't know what else to say and gave up, instead turning my attention to the stairs as we climbed back up to the lodge's main level. Unexpectedly, Maya was the one who continued the conversation.
I watched you break up that fight, she said slowly. You mentioned offensive magic, like you knew about it.
Oh, great. She was going to make a play at blackmail. Or was she? At the moment, she seemed almost civil.
I was just guessing, I said. No way I was going to bust Tasha and Christian. I don't really know that much. Just stories I've heard.
Oh. Her face fell.
What kind of stories?
Well, I tried to think of something neither too vague nor too specific. Like I told those guys, the concentration thing is big, because if you're in a battle with Strigoi, all sorts of things can distract you, so you've got to keep control. That was actually a basic guardian rule, but it must have been new to Maya. Her eyes widened with eagerness.
What else? What kind of spells do people use?
I shook my head. I don't know. I don't really even know how spells work. And like I said, these are just stories I've heard. My guess is you just find ways to use your element as a weapon, like
Fire users really have an advantage because fire will kill Strigoi, so it's easy for them, and air users can suffocate people. I'd actually experienced that last one vicariously through Lyssa. It had been horrible. Maya's eyes grew wider still. What about a water user? She asked. How could water hurt a Strigoi? I paused.
I never heard any stories about water users. Sorry.
Do you have any ideas, though? Ways that, like, someone like me could learn to fight?
Ah, so that's what this was about. It actually wasn't all that crazy. I remembered how excited she'd looked at the meeting when Tasha had talked about attacking Strigoi. Maya wanted to take revenge on the Strigoi for her mother's death. No wonder she and Mason had been getting along so well.
Maya, I said gently, catching hold of the door to let her pass. We were almost at the lobby now. I know how you must want to do something, but I think you're better off just sort of letting yourself, grieve.
She reddened, and suddenly I was seeing the normal and angry Maya.
Don't talk down to me, she said.
Hey, I'm not. I'm serious. I'm just saying you shouldn't do anything rash while you're still upset. Besides,
I bit off my words. She narrowed her eyes.
What?
Screw it. She needed to know.
Well, I don't really know what good a water user could be against a Strigoi. It's probably the least useful element to use on one of them.
Outrage filled her features.
You're a real bitch, you know that?
I'm just telling you the truth.
Well, let me tell you the truth. You're a total idiot when it comes to guys.
I thought about Dimitri. She wasn't entirely off base.
Mason's great, she continued. One of the nicest guys I know, and you don't even notice. He'd do anything for you, and you were off throwing yourself at Adrian Ivashkov.
Her words surprised me. Could Maya have a crush on Mason? And while I certainly hadn't been throwing myself at Adrian, I could see how it might have looked that way. And even if it weren't true, that wouldn't have stopped Mason from feeling hurt and betrayed.
You're right, I said.
Maya stared at me, so astonished I'd agreed with her that she didn't say anything else for the rest of the walk. We reached the part of the lodge that split off into different wings for guys and girls. I grabbed a hold of Mason's arm as the others walked off.
Hang on, I told him. I badly needed to reassure him about Adrian, but a tiny part of me wondered if I was doing it because I actually wanted Mason or because I just liked the idea of him wanting me and selfishly didn't want to lose that. He stopped and looked at me. His face was wary.
I wanted to tell you I'm sorry. I shouldn't have yelled at you after the fight. I know you were just trying to help. And with Adrian, nothing happened. I mean it.
It didn't look that way,
Mason said. But the anger on his face had faded. I know. But believe me, it's all him. He's got some kind of stupid crush on me. My tone must have been convincing because Mason smiled.
Well, hard not to.
I'm not interested in him, I continued. Or anyone else. It was a small lie, but I didn't think it mattered just then. I was going to be over Dimitri soon, and Maya had been right about Mason. He was wonderful, and sweet, and cute. I would be an idiot not to pursue this, right? My hand was still on his arm, and I pulled him toward me. He didn't need much more of a signal. He leaned down and kissed me, and in the process, I found myself pressed up against the wall. Very much like with Dimitri in the practice room. Of course, it felt nothing like how it had with Dimitri, but it was still nice in its way. I put my arms around Mason and started to pull him closer.
We could go somewhere, I said.
He pushed back and laughed.
Not when you're drunk.
I'm not that drunk anymore, I said, trying to pull him back.
Giving me a small kiss on the lips, he stepped back.
Drunk enough. Look, this isn't easy, believe me. But if you still want me tomorrow, when you're sober, then we'll talk.
He leaned down and kissed me again. I tried to wrap my arms around him,
but he broke away once more.
"Easy there, girl,"
he teased, backing toward his hallway. I glared at him, but he only laughed and turned around. As he walked away, my glare faded, and I headed back to my room with a smile on my face. Chapter 15. I was trying to paint my toenails the next morning, not easy with such a god-awful hangover, when I heard a knock at the door. Lissa had been gone when I woke up, so I staggered across the room, trying not to ruin my wet nail polish. Opening the door, I saw one of the hotel staff standing outside with a large box in both arms. He shifted it slightly so that he could peer around and look at me.
"I'm looking for Rose Hathaway?"
"That's me." I took the box from him. It was big, but not all that heavy. With a quick thank you, I shut the door, wondering if I should have tipped him. Oh, well. I sat on the floor with the box. It had no markings on it and was sealed with packing tape. I found a pen and stabbed at the tape. Once I'd hacked off enough, I opened the box and peered inside. It was filled with perfume. There had to be at least 30 little bottles of perfume packed into the box. Some I'd heard of, some I hadn't. They ranged from crazy expensive, movie star caliber, to cheap kinds I'd seen in drugstores. Eternity, Angel, Vanilla Fields, Jade Blossom, Michael Kors, Poison, Hypnotic Poison, Pure Poison, Happy, Light Blue, Yovan Musk, Pink Sugar, Vera Wang. One by one, I picked up the boxes, read the descriptions, and then pulled out the bottles for a sniff. I was about halfway through when reality hit. These had to be from Adrian. I didn't know how he'd managed to get all of these delivered to the hotel in such a short amount of time, but money can make almost anything happen. Still, I didn't need the attention of a rich, spoiled Maroi. Apparently, he hadn't picked up on my signals. Regretfully, I started to place the perfumes back in the box, then stopped. Of course, I'd return them, but there was no harm in sniffing the rest before I did. Once more, I started pulling out bottle after bottle. Some I just snipped the cap of. Others I sprayed in the air. Serendipity, Dolce & Gabbana, Shalimar, Daisy. Note after note hit me. Rose. Violet. Sandalwood. Orange. Vanilla. Orchid. By the time I was finished, my nose barely worked anymore. All of these had been designed for humans. They had a weaker sense of smell than vampires and even dampiers, so these scents were extra strong. I had a new appreciation for what Adrian had meant about only a splash of perfume being necessary. If all these bottles were making me dizzy, I could only imagine what a Maroi would smell. The sensory overload wasn't really helping the headache I'd woken up with either. I packed up the perfume for real this time, stopping only when I came to a certain kind that I really liked. I hesitated, holding the little box in my hand. Then, I took the red bottle out and re-sniffed it. It was a crisp, sweet fragrance. There was some kind of fruit, but not a candied or sugary fruit. I racked my brain for a scent I'd once smelled on a girl I knew in my dorm. She'd told me the name. It was like a cherry, but sharper. Currant. That's what it was. And here it was in this perfume, mixed with some florals, Lily of the Valley and others I couldn't identify. Whatever the blend, something about it appealed to me. Sweet, but not too sweet. I read the box, looking for the name. Amor, Amor. Fitting, I muttered, seeing how many love problems I seem to have lately. But I kept the perfume anyway and repacked the rest. Hoisting the box up in my arms, I took it down to the front desk and acquired some packing tape to reseal it. I also got directions to Adrian's room. Apparently, the Ivashkovs practically had their own wing. It wasn't too far from Tasha's room. Feeling like a delivery girl, I walked down the hall and stopped in front of his door. Before I could manage to knock, it opened up, and Adrian stood before me.
He looked as surprised as I felt.
Little Dampier, he said cordially. Didn't expect to see you here.
I'm returning these. I hoisted the box toward him before he could protest. Clumsily, he caught it, staggering a bit in surprise. Once he had a good grip, he took a few steps back and set it on the floor.
Didn't you like any of them? He asked. You want me to get you some more?
Don't send me any more gifts.
It isn't a gift. It's a public service. What woman doesn't own perfume?
Don't do it again, I said firmly. Suddenly, a voice behind him asked, Rose, is that you? I peered beyond him. Lissa. What are you doing here? Between my headache and what I had assumed was some interlude with Christian, I'd blocked her out as best I could this morning. Normally, I would have known the instant I approached that she was inside the room. I opened myself up again, letting her shock run into me. She hadn't expected me to show up here.
What are you doing here? She asked.
Ladies, ladies, he said teasingly. No need to fight over me.
I glared. We're not. I just want to know what's going on here. A breath of aftershave hit me, and then I heard a voice behind me.
Me too.
I jumped. Spinning around, I saw Dmitri standing in the hallway. I had no clue what he was doing in the Ivashkov wing. On his way to Tasha's room, a voice inside me suggested. Dmitri no doubt always expected me to get into all sorts of trouble, but I think seeing Lissa there caught him off guard. He stepped past me and came into the room, looking between the three of us.
Male and female students aren't supposed to be in each other's rooms.
I knew pointing out that Adrian wasn't technically a student wasn't going to get us out of trouble here. We weren't supposed to be in any guy's room.
How do you keep doing this? I asked Adrian, frustrated.
Do what?
Keep making us look bad. He chuckled.
You guys are the ones who came here.
You shouldn't have let them in, scolded Dmitri.
I'm sure you know the rules at St. Vladimir's.
Adrian shrugged.
Yeah, but I don't have to follow any school's stupid rules.
Perhaps not, said Dmitri coldly. But I would have thought you'd still respect those rules.
Adrian rolled his eyes.
I'm kind of surprised to find you lecturing about underage girls.
I saw the anger kindle in Dmitri's eyes, and for a moment, I thought I might have seen the loss of control I'd teased him about. But he stayed composed, and only his clenched fists showed how angry he was.
Besides, continued Adrian, nothing sordid was going on. We're just hanging out. If you want to hang out with young girls, do it at one of the public areas.
I didn't really like Dmitri calling us young girls, and I kind of felt like he was overreacting here. I also suspected part of his reaction had to do with the fact that I was here. Adrian laughed just then, a weird kind of laugh that made my skin crawl.
Young girls? Young girls? Sure. Young and old at the same time. They've barely seen anything in life, yet they've already seen too much. One's marked with life, and one's marked with death. But they're the ones you're worried about? Worry about yourself, Dampier. Worry about you, and worry about me. We're the ones who are young.
The rest of us just sort of stared. I don't think anyone had expected Adrian to suddenly take an abrupt trip to Crazyville. Adrian was calm and looked perfectly normal again. He turned away and strolled toward the window, glancing casually back at the rest of us as he pulled out his cigarettes.
You ladies should probably go.
He's right.
I am a bad influence.
I exchanged looks with Lissa. Hurriedly, we both left and followed Dmitri down the hall toward the lobby. That was strange, I said a couple of minutes later. It was stating the obvious, but well, someone had to.
Very, said Dmitri.
He didn't sound angry so much as puzzled. When we reached the lobby, I started to follow Lissa back toward our room, but Dmitri called to me.
Rose, he said, can I talk to you?
I felt a sympathetic rush of feeling from Lissa. I turned toward Dimitri and stepped off to the side of the room, out of the way of those passing through. A party of Moroi in diamonds and fur swept past us, anxious looks on their faces. Bellhops followed with luggage. People were still leaving in search of safer places. The Strigoi paranoia was far from over. Dimitri's voice snapped my attention back to him.
That's Adrian Ivashkov.
He said the name the same way everyone else did.
Yeah, I know.
This is the second time I've seen you with him.
Yeah, I replied glibly. We hang out sometimes.
Dimitri arched an eyebrow, then jerked his head back toward where he'd come from.
You hang out in his room a lot?
Several retorts popped into my head, and then a golden one took precedence.
What happens between him and me is none of your business.
I managed a tone very similar to the one he'd used on me when making a similar comment about him and Tasha.
Actually, as long as you're at the academy, what you do is my business.
Not my personal life. You don't have any say in that.
You're not an adult yet.
I'm close enough. Besides, it's not like I'll magically become an adult on my 18th birthday.
Clearly,
he said. I blushed. That's not what I meant.
I know what you meant. And the technicalities don't matter right now. You're an academy student. I'm your instructor. It's my job to help you and to keep you safe. Being in the bedroom of someone like him, well, that's not safe.
I can handle Adrian Ivashkov, I muttered. He's weird. Really weird, apparently. But harmless. I secretly wondered if Dimitri's problem might be that he was jealous. He hadn't pulled Lissa aside to yell at her. The thought made me slightly happy. But then I remembered my earlier curiosity about why Dimitri had even wandered by. Speaking of personal lives, I suppose you were off visiting Tasha, huh? I knew it was petty, and I expected a none of your business response. Instead, he replied,
Actually, I was visiting your mother.
You going to hook up with her, too? I knew, of course, that he wasn't, but the quip seemed too good to pass up. He seemed to know that, too, and merely gave me a weary glance.
No. We were looking over some new data about the Strigoi in the Drozdov attack.
My anger and snarkiness dried up. The Drozdovs. The Badikas. Suddenly, everything that had happened this morning seemed incredibly trivial. How could I have stood there arguing with Dimitri about romances that might or might not be happening when he and the other guardians were trying to protect us? What'd you find out? I asked quietly.
We've managed to track some of the Strigoi, he said. Or at least the humans with them. There were witnesses who lived nearby who spotted a few of the cars the group used. The plates were all from different states. The group appears to have split up, probably to make it harder for us. But one of the witnesses did catch one plate number. It's registered to an address in Spokane.
Spokane? I asked incredulously. Spokane, Washington? Who makes Spokane their hideout? I'd been there once. It was about as boring as every other backwoods northwest city.
Strigoi, apparently, he said, deadpan. The address was fake, but other evidence shows they really are there. There's a kind of shopping plaza that has some underground tunnels. There have been Strigoi sightings around that area.
Then, I frowned, are you going to go after them? Is somebody going to? I mean, this is what Tasha's been saying all along. If we know where they are... He shook his head.
The Guardians can't do anything without permission from higher up. That's not going to happen anytime soon.
I sighed. Because the Moroi talk too much.
They're being cautious, he said.
I felt myself getting worked up again. Come on. Even you can't want to be careful on this one,
You actually know where Strigoi are hiding out. Strigoi, who massacred children. Don't you want to go after them when they don't expect it? I sounded like Mason now.
It's not that easy, he said. We answer to the Guardian Council and the Moroi government. We can't just run off and act on impulse. And anyway, we don't know everything yet. You should never walk into any situation without knowing all the details.
Zen life lessons again, I sighed. I ran a hand through my hair, tucking it behind my ears. Why do you tell me this anyway? This is Guardian stuff, not the kind of thing you let novices in on.
He considered his words and his expression softened. He always looked amazing, but I liked him best like this.
I've said a few things, the other day and today, that I shouldn't have. Things that insulted your age. You're 17, but you're capable of handling and processing the same things those much older than you do.
My chest grew light and fluttery.
Really?
He nodded.
You're still really young in a lot of ways, and act young. But the only way to really change that is to treat you like an adult. I need to do that more. I know you'll take this information and understand how important it is, and keep it to yourself.
I didn't love being told I acted young, but I liked the idea that he would talk to me like an equal.
Dimka?
Came a voice. Tasha Ozera walked up to us. She smiled when she saw me.
Hello, Rose.
There went my mood.
Hey,
I said flatly. She placed a hand on Dimitri's forearm, sliding her fingers over the leather of his coat. I eyed those fingers angrily. How dare they touch him?
You've got that look, she told him. What look?
He asked. The stern look he'd worn with me vanished. There was a small, knowing smile on his lips, almost a playful one.
That look that says you're going to be on duty all day.
Really? I have a look like that?
There was a teasing, mocking tone to his voice. She nodded.
When does your shift technically end?
Dimitri actually looked, I swear, sheepish.
An hour ago.
You can't keep doing this, she groaned. You need a break.
Well, if you consider that I'm always Liss's guardian.
For now, she said knowingly, I felt sicker than I had last night.
There's a big pool tournament going on upstairs.
I can't, he said, but the smile was still on his face.
Even though I haven't played in a long time.
What the? Dimitri played pool? Suddenly, it didn't matter that we'd just had a discussion about him treating me like an adult. Some small part of me did know what a compliment that was, but the rest of me wanted him to treat me like he did Tasha. Playful, teasing, casual. They were so familiar with each other, so completely at ease.
Come on, then, she begged. Just one round. We could take them all.
I can't, he repeated. He sounded regretful.
Not with everything going on.
She sobered a little.
No, I suppose not.
Glancing at me, she said teasingly,
I hope you realize what a hardcore role model you have here. He's never off duty.
Well, I said, copying her lilting tone from earlier. For now, at least. Tasha looked puzzled. I don't think it occurred to her that I'd be making fun of her. Dimitri's dark look told me he knew exactly what I was doing. I immediately realized I'd just killed whatever progress I'd made as an adult.
We're finished here, Rose. Remember what I said.
Yeah, I said, turning away. I suddenly wanted to go to my room and veg for a while. This day was making me tired already.
Definitely.
I hadn't gotten far when I ran into Mason. Good God, men everywhere.
You're mad,
he said as soon as he looked at my face. He had a knack for discovering my moods.
What happened?
Some authority problems. It's been a weird morning. I sighed, unable to get Dimitri off the brain. Looking at Mason,
I remembered how I'd been convinced I wanted to get serious with him last night. I was a head case. I couldn't make up my mind about anyone. Deciding the best way to banish one guy was to pay attention to another. I grabbed Mason's hand and steered him away. Come on. Wasn't the deal to go somewhere, private today?
I figured you weren't drunk anymore.
He joked, but his eyes looked very, very serious and interested.
I assumed it was all off.
Hey, I stand by my claims, no matter what. Opening my mind, I searched for Lyssa. She was no longer in our room. She'd gone off to some other royal event, no doubt still practicing for Priscilla Voda's big dinner. Come on, I told Mason. We'll go to my room. Aside from when Dimitri inconveniently happened to be passing by someone's room, nobody was really enforcing the mixed gender rule. It was practically like being back in my academy dorms. As Mason and I went upstairs, I related to him what Dimitri had told me about the Strigoi in Spokane. Dimitri had told me to keep it to myself, but I was mad at him again, and I didn't see any harm in telling Mason. I knew he'd be interested in this. I was right. Mason got really worked up.
What?
He exclaimed as we walked into my room.
They're not doing anything?
I shrugged and sat on my bed. Dimitri said,
I know, I heard you, about being careful and all that.
Mason paced around the room angrily.
But if those Strigoi go after another Maroi, another family, damn it. They're going to wish they weren't so careful then.
Forget about it, I said. I felt kind of miffed that me on a bed wasn't enough to deter him from crazy battle plans. There's nothing we can do. He stopped walking.
We could go.
Go where? I asked stupidly.
To Spokane. There are buses you can catch in town.
Wait, you want us to go to Spokane and take on Strigoi?
Sure. Eddie'd do it too. We could go to that mall. They wouldn't be organized or anything, so we could wait and pick them off one by one.
I could only stare. When did you get so dumb?
Oh, I see. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
It's not about confidence, I argued, standing up and approaching him. You kick major ass. I've seen it. But this isn't the way. We can't go get Eddie and take on Strigoi. We need more people, more planning, more information. I rested my hands on his chest. He placed his over them and smiled. The fire of battle was still in his eyes, but I could tell his mind was shifting to more immediate concerns. Like me. I didn't mean to call you dumb, I told him. I'm sorry.
You're just saying that now because you want to have your way with me.
Of course I am, I laughed, happy to see him relax. The nature of this conversation reminded me a little of the one Christian and Lyssa had in the chapel.
Well, he said, I don't think I'm going to be too hard to take advantage of.
Good, because there are lots of things I want to do. I slid my hands up and around his neck. His skin was warm beneath my fingers, and I remembered how much I'd enjoyed kissing him last night. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he said,
You really are his student.
Whose?
Belikov's. I was just thinking about when you mentioned needing more information and stuff. You act just like him. You've gotten all serious since you've been hanging out with him.
No, I haven't. Mason had pulled me closer, but now I suddenly didn't feel so romantic. I'd wanted to make out and forget Dimitri for a while, not have a conversation about him. Where had this come from? Mason was supposed to be distracting me. He didn't notice anything was wrong.
You've just changed, that's all. It's not bad, just different.
Something about that made me angry, but before I could snap back, his mouth met mine in a kiss. Reasonable discussions sort of vanished. A bit of that dark temper started to rise in me, but I simply channeled that intensity into physicality as Mason and I fell on top of each other. I yanked him down on the bed, managing to do so without stopping the kissing. I was nothing if not a multitasker. I dug my nails into his back while his hand slid up the back of my neck and released the ponytail I'd just made minutes ago. Running his fingers through the unbound hair, he shifted his mouth down and kissed my neck.
"You are amazing," he told me, and I could tell that he meant it. His whole face glowed with affection for me.
I arched upward, letting his lips press harder against my skin while his hands slipped under the bottom of my shirt. They trailed upward along my stomach, just barely tracing the edge of my bra. Considering we'd just been having an argument a minute ago, I was surprised to see things escalating so quickly. Honestly, though, I didn't mind. This was the way I lived my life. Everything was always fast and intense with me. The night Dmitri and I had fallen victim to Viktor Doshkov's lust charm, there'd been some pretty furious passion going on, too. Dmitri had controlled it, though, so sometimes we'd taken things slowly, and that had been wonderful in its own way. But most of the time, we hadn't been able to hold ourselves back. I could feel it all over again. The ways his hands had run over my body, the deep, powerful kisses. It was then that I realized something. I was kissing Mason, but in my head, I was with Dmitri. And it wasn't like I was simply remembering either. I was actually imagining I was with Dmitri. Right now. Reliving that night all over again. With my eyes closed, it was easy to pretend. But when I opened them and saw Mason's eyes, I knew he was with me. He adored me and had wanted me for a long time. But for me to do this, to be with him and pretend I was with someone else, it wasn't right. I wiggled out of his reach. "No, don't." Mason stopped immediately because that's the kind of guy he was. "Too much?" he asked. I nodded. "That's okay. We don't have to do that." He reached for me again and I moved farther away.
"No, I just don't, I don't know. Let's call it quits, okay?"
He was speechless for a moment.
"What happened to the lots of things you wanted to do?"
"Yeah, it looked pretty bad, but what could I say? I can't get physical with you because when I do, I just think about the other guy I actually want. You're just a stand-in?" I swallowed, feeling stupid. "I'm sorry, Mace, I just can't." He sat up and ran a hand over his hair.
"Okay, all right."
I could hear the hardness in his voice. "You're mad." He glanced over at me, a stormy expression on his face.
"I'm just confused. I can't read your signals. One moment you're hot, the next you're cold. You tell me you want me, then you tell me you don't. If you picked one, that'd be fine. But you keep making me think one thing, and then you end up going in a completely different direction. Not just now, all the time."
It was true. I had gone back and forth with him. Sometimes I was flirty, other times I completely ignored him.
"Is there something you want me to do?" he asked when I didn't say anything. "Something that'll, I don't know, make you feel better about me?"
"I don't know," I said weakly. He sighed.
"Then what do you want in general?"
"Dmitri," I thought. Instead, I repeated myself. "I don't know." With a groan, he stood up and headed for the door.
"Rose, for someone who claims she wants to gather as much information as possible, you really have a lot to learn about yourself."
The door slammed behind him. The noise made me flinch, and as I stared at where Mason had just stood, I realized he was right. I did have a lot to learn. Chapter 16. Lissa found me later in the day. I'd fallen asleep after Mason left, too dejected to leave the bed. Her slamming of the door jolted me awake. I was happy to see her. I needed to spill about the fumbled thing with Mason, but before I could, I read her feelings. They were as troubled as mine. So, as always, I put her first. "What happened?" She sat on her bed, sinking into the feather duvet, her feelings both furious and sad.
Christian?
Really? I'd never known them to fight. They teased each other a lot. But it was hardly the kind of thing that could nearly bring her to tears.
He found out I was with Adrian this morning.
Oh, wow, I said. Yeah, that might be a problem. Standing up, I walked over to the dresser and found my brush. Wincing, I stood in front of the gilt-framed mirror and began brushing out the snarls acquired during my nap. She groaned.
But nothing happened. Christian's freaking out over nothing. I can't believe he doesn't trust me.
He trusts you. The whole thing's just weird, that's all. I thought about Dimitri and Tasha. Jealousy makes people do and say stupid things.
But nothing happened, she repeated. I mean, you were there and...
Hey, I never found out. What were you doing there? Adrian sent me a bunch of perfume.
You mean that giant box you were carrying?
I nodded.
Whoa.
Yeah, I came to return it, I said. The question is, what were you doing there?
Just talking, she said.
She started to light up, on the verge of telling me something, but then she paused. I felt the thought almost reach the front of her mind and then get shoved back.
I've got a lot to tell you, but first, tell me what's up with you.
Nothing's up with me.
Whatever, Rose. I'm not psychic like you, but I know when you're pissed off about something. You've been kind of down since Christmas. What's up?
Now wasn't the time to get into what had happened on Christmas when my mom told me about Tasha and Dimitri. But I did tell Lissa the story about Mason, editing out why I had stopped and simply driving home how I had.
Well, she said when I finished,
that was your right.
I know, but I kind of led him on. I can see why he'd be upset.
You guys can probably fix it, though. Go talk to him. He's crazy about you. It was more than miscommunication. Things with Mason and me couldn't be patched up so easily.
I don't know, I told her. Not everyone's like you and Christian.
Her face darkened.
Christian, I still can't believe he's being so stupid about this.
I didn't mean to, but I laughed. Liz, you guys will kiss and make up in like a day. More than kiss, probably. It slipped out before I could stop it. Her eyes widened.
You know.
She shook her head in exasperation.
Of course you know.
Sorry, I said. I hadn't meant to let her know I knew about the sex thing, not until she told me herself. She eyed me.
How much do you know?
Not much, I lied. I'd finished brushing my hair but began playing with the brush's handle in order to avoid her eyes.
I have got to learn to keep you out of my mind,
she muttered. Only way I can talk to you lately. Another slip-up.
What's that supposed to mean? She demanded.
Nothing, She was giving me a sharp look.
I don't know. I just feel like we don't talk as much anymore.
Takes two to fix that, she said, voice kind again. You're right, I said, not pointing out that two could fix that only if one wasn't always with her boyfriend. True, I was guilty in my own way of locking things up, but I had wanted to talk to her a number of times lately. The timing just never seemed to be right, not even now.
You know, I never thought you'd be first. Or I guess I never thought I'd be a senior and still be a virgin.
Yeah, she said dryly. Me either.
Hey, what's that supposed to mean?
She grinned, then caught sight of her watch. Her smile fell.
Ugh, I've got to go to Priscilla's banquet. Christian was supposed to go with me, but he's off being an idiot.
Her eyes focused hopefully on me.
What? No, please, Liz. You know I hate those formal royal things.
Oh, come on, she begged.
Christian flaked out. You can't throw me to the wolves. And didn't you just say we needed to talk more? I groaned. Besides, when you're my guardian, you'll have to do these things all the time.
I know, I said darkly. I thought I could maybe enjoy my last 6 months of freedom.
But in the end, she conned me into going with her, as we'd both known she would. We didn't have much time, and I had to do a rush shower, blow dry, and makeup job. I'd brought Tasha's dress on a whim, and while I still wanted her to suffer horribly for being attracted to Dimitri, I was grateful for her present now. I pulled on the silken material, happy to see the shade of red was just as killer on me as I'd imagined. It was a long, Asian-style dress with flowers embroidered into the silk. The high neck and long hem covered a lot of skin, but the material clung to me and looked sexy in a different kind of way than showing a lot of skin did. My black eye was practically non-existent by now. Lissa, as always, looked amazing. She wore a deep purple dress by John Orosky, a well-known Moroi designer. It was sleeveless and made of satin. The tiny amethyst-like crystals set into the straps sparkled against her pale skin. She wore her hair up in a loose, artfully styled bun. When we reached the banquet room, we drew a few eyes. I don't think the royals had expected the Dragomor princess to bring her Dampier friend to this highly anticipated, invitation-only dinner. But hey, Lissa's invite had said, and guessed. She and I took our places at one of the tables with some royals whose names I promptly forgot. They were happy to ignore me, and I was happy to be ignored. Besides, it wasn't like there weren't plenty of other distractions. This room was done all in silver and blue. Midnight blue silk cloths covered the tables, so shiny and smooth that I was terrified to eat on them. Sconces of beeswax candles hung all over the walls, and a fireplace, decorated with stained glass, crackled away in one corner. The effect was a spectacular panorama of color and light, dizzying to the eye. In the corner, a slim Moroi woman played soft cello music, her face dreamy as she focused on the song. The clinking of crystal wine glasses complemented the string's low, sweet notes. Dinner was equally amazing. The food was elaborate, but I recognized everything on my plate. China, of course, and liked all of it. No foie gras here. Salmon in a sauce of shiitake mushrooms. A salad with pears and goat cheese. Delicate almond-stuffed pastries for dessert. My only complaint was that the portions were small. The food seemed more like it was there to simply decorate the plates, and I swear, I finished it in 10 bites. Moroi might still need food along with their blood, but they didn't need as much as a human, or say, a growing Dampier girl needed. Still, the food alone could have justified me coming along on this venture, I decided. Except, when the meal ended, Lissa told me we couldn't leave.
"We have to mingle," she whispered.
"Mingle?"
Lissa laughed at my discomfort.
"You're the social one."
It was true. In most circumstances, I was the one who put myself out there and wasn't afraid to talk to people. Lissa tended to be shyer. Only, with this group, the tables were turned. This was her element, not mine. And it amazed me to see just how well she could interact with royal high society now. She was perfect, polished, and polite. Everyone was eager to talk to her, and she always seemed to know the right thing to say. She wasn't using compulsion, exactly, but she definitely put out an air that drew others to her. I think it might have been an unconscious effect of spirit. Even with the meds, her magical and natural charisma came through. Whereas intense social interactions had once been forced and stressful for her, she now conducted them with ease. I was proud of her. Most of the conversation stayed pretty light. Fashion, royal love lives, etc. No one seemed to want to spoil the atmosphere with ugly Strigoi talk. So I clung to her side for the rest of the night.
I tried to tell myself it was just practice for the future, when I'd follow her around like a quiet shadow anyway. The truth was, I just felt too uncomfortable with this group and knew my usual snarky defense mechanisms really weren't useful here. Plus, I was painfully aware that I was the only Dampier dinner guest. There were other Dampiers, yes, but they were in formal guardian mode, hovering on the periphery of the room. As Lissa worked the crowd, we drifted over to a small group of Moroi whose voices were growing louder. One of them I recognized. He was the guy from the fight I'd helped break up, only this time he wore a striking black tuxedo instead of a swimsuit. He glanced up at our approach, blatantly checked us out, but apparently didn't remember me. Ignoring us, he continued on with his argument. Not surprisingly, Moroi protection was the topic. He was the one who'd been in favor of Moroi going on the offensive against the Strigoi.
"What part of suicide don't you understand?"
asked one of the men standing nearby.
He had silvery hair and a bushy mustache. He wore a tux, too, but the younger guy looked better in one.
"Moroi training as soldiers will be the end of our race."
"It's not suicide," exclaimed the young guy. "It's the right thing to do. We have to start looking out for ourselves.
Learning to fight and use our magic is our greatest asset other than the Guardians." "Yes, but with the Guardians, we don't need other assets," said Silverhair. "You've been listening to non-royals. They don't have any Guardians of their own, so of course they're scared. But that's no reason to drag us down and put our lives at risk."
"Then don't," said Lissa suddenly. Her voice was soft, but everyone in the little group stopped and looked at her. "When you talk about Moroi learning how to fight, you make it sound like an all-or-nothing matter. It's not. If you don't want to fight, then you shouldn't have to. I completely understand."
The man looked slightly mollified. "But that's because you can rely on your Guardians. A lot of Moroi can't. And if they want to learn self-defense, there's no reason why they shouldn't do it on their own."
The younger guy grinned triumphantly at his adversary.
"There, you see. It's not that easy," countered Silverhair. "If it was just a matter of you crazy people wanting to get yourselves killed, then fine, go do it. But where are you going to learn all these so-called fighting skills?"
"We'll figure out the magic on our own. Guardians will teach us actual physical fighting."
"Yes, see? I knew that was where this was going. Even if the rest of us don't take part in your suicide mission, you still want to strip us of our Guardians to train up your pretend army."
The young guy scowled at the word pretend, and I wondered if more fists would fly.
"You owe it to us."
"No, they don't," said Lissa. Intrigued gazes turned her way again. This time, it was Silverhair who regarded her triumphantly. The younger guy's features flushed with anger.
"Guardians are the best battle resources we have."
"They are," she agreed. "But that doesn't give you the right to take them away from their duty." Silverhair practically glowed.
"Then how are we supposed to learn?"
demanded the other guy. "The same way Guardians do," Lissa informed him. "If you want to learn to fight, go to the academies. Form classes and start at the beginning, the same way the novices do. That way, you won't be taking Guardians away from active protection. It's a safe environment. And the Guardians there specialize in teaching students anyway." She paused thoughtfully. "You could even start making defense part of the standard curriculum for Moroi students already there." Astonished stares fell on her, mine included. It was such an elegant solution, and everyone else around us realized it. It gave no party 100% of its demands, but it met most in a way that didn't really harm the other side. Pure genius. The other Moroi studied her with wonder and fascination. Suddenly, everyone started talking at once, excited about the idea. They drew Lissa in,
And soon, there was a passionate conversation going on about her plan. I got shuffled to the edges and decided that was just fine. Then, I retreated altogether and sought out a corner near a door. Along the way, I passed a server with a tray of hors d'oeuvres. Still hungry, I eyed them suspiciously, but saw nothing that looked like the foie gras from the other day. I gestured to one that looked like some sort of braised rare meat. "Is that goose liver?" I asked. She shook her head. "Sweetbread." That didn't sound bad. I reached for it.
"It's pancreas,"
said a voice behind me. I jerked back. "What?" I squeaked. The waitress took my shock for rejection and moved on. Adrian Ivashkov moved into my line of sight, looking immensely pleased with himself. "Are you messing with me?" I asked. "Sweetbread is pancreas?" I don't know why that shocked me so much. Moroi consumed blood. Why not internal organs? Still, I repressed a shudder. Adrian shrugged.
"It's really good."
I shook my head in disgust. "Oh, man, rich people suck." His amusement continued.
"What are you doing here, little Dampier? Are you following me around?"
"Of course not," I scoffed. He was dressed to perfection, as always. "Especially not after all the trouble you've gotten us into." He flashed one of his tantalizing smiles, and despite how much he annoyed me, I again felt that overwhelming urge to be near him. What was up with that?
"I don't know," he teased.
He'd looked perfectly sane now, exhibiting no trace of the weird behavior I'd witnessed in his room. And yeah, he looked a lot better in a tuxedo than any guy I'd seen in there so far.
"As many times as we keep seeing each other? This is, what, the fifth time? It's starting to look suspicious. Don't worry, though. I won't tell your boyfriend. Either of them."
I opened my mouth to protest, then remembered he'd seen me with Dimitri earlier. I refused to blush. I only have one boyfriend. Sort of. Maybe not anymore. And anyway, there's nothing to tell. I don't even like you.
"No?"
asked Adrian, still smiling. He leaned toward me, like he had a secret to share.
"Then why are you wearing my perfume?"
This time, I did blush. I took a step back. "I'm not!" He laughed.
"Of course you are. I counted the boxes after you left. Besides, I can smell it on you. It's nice. Sharp. But still sweet. Just like I'm sure you are deep down inside. And you got it right, you know. Just enough to add an edge, but not enough to drown your own scent."
The way he said scent made it sound like a dirty word. Royal Moroi might make me uncomfortable, but smart-ass guys hitting on me didn't. I dealt with them on a regular basis. I shook off my shyness and remembered who I was. "Hey," I said, tossing my hair back. "I had every right to take one. You offered them. Your mistake is in assuming me taking one means anything. It doesn't, except that maybe you should be more careful with where you dump all that money of yours."
"Ooh, Rose Hathaway is here to play, folks."
He paused and took a glass of what looked like champagne from a passing waiter.
"You want one?"
"I don't drink." "Right." Adrian handed me a glass anyway, then shooed the waiter away and took a drink of the champagne. I had a feeling it wasn't his first of the night.
"So, sounds like our Vasilisa put my dad in his place."
"Your..." I glanced back at the group I'd just left. Silverhair still stood there, gesticulating wildly. "That guy's your dad?"
"That's what my mom says."
"You agree with him? About how Moroi fighting would be suicide?" Adrian shrugged and took another sip.
"I don't really have an opinion on that."
"That's not possible. How can you not feel one way or another?"
"Dunno. Just not something I think about. I've got better things to do."
"Like stalk me," I suggested. and Lissa. I still wanted to know why she'd been in his room. He smiled again.
I told you. You're the one following me.
Yeah, I know, 5 times. I stopped.